Hello and welcome to Dvorak Horowitz Unplugged, an hour-long discussion of activity in the financial markets around the world, featuring columnist John C. Dvorak and money manager Andrew Horowitz. This conversation is casual and unrehearsed. Let's join John and Andrew now.
I'm John C. Dvorak.
I'm Andrew Horowitz.
And here we are on, the date is April 19th, and the stock market is, I don't know, it's been acting a little, we had some good numbers, some bad numbers, and Intel came up with really good numbers, at least that's what some people think.
Yeah, well, Intel couldn't come up with anything better. By the way, you sound great. I have these new headphones you told me to buy.
Yeah, V-Moda.
Did you tell me that on the air last week?
I don't think so.
Yeah, these $15 specials are very comfortable and very bassy, very true sounding, and voice canceling, noise canceling.
Yeah,
I'm gonna wear them to sleep. But they're very good. Yeah, so Intel came out with great numbers after the close. They had margins were solid, and I think one of the most interesting parts of what went on after the earnings release was the conference call. There was some comment that said something like, I don't know what they're talking about, but PC shipments are fine. And we're seeing a lot of demand in emerging markets. We're seeing a great demand around the world, blah, 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 blah. You know, earlier in the week, did you see that story?
In fact, I wrote a column about it in PC Magazine explaining that they need to do better marketing if these numbers are what they say. And then, of course, the Intel guys just say the numbers are bogus.
Yeah, I don't, because they're not looking at the right places.
I guess. I don't know.
But it's like anything else. If you constantly study the same information, you get a long-term trend, right, of that information. But if you start all of a sudden adding in areas that weren't in there before, it could skew it but yet give you better long-term information from a broader specimen patch, if you will, or whatever you call it.
Or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah. A broader cross-section.
Well, whatever the case is, it's good because I think both Intel and AMD should benefit. They have some product out, both companies, right now that is just so nice and it's inexpensive and powerful chips. It's just astonishing what you can do. I've been kind of in the process of building machines. I go on a Jag every so often. I've built about three so far, and I got a new ITX motherboard, little one that just came in.
And what's your favorite motherboard to use? What brand?
I think they're all pretty good. I mean, I like Gigabyte. I like I think Intel makes good, really good, inexpensive motherboards for their Atom and some of these other chips, and also for their new Core i7s, whatever. Mm-hmm. I think those are nice boards.
You ever check out the Asus?
Yeah, I've got a machine running off of one of those right now, and I like them. I think it's one of the more popular brands right now.
Yeah, I like it. I like them. But, you know, the thing about Intel, it's been Intel and the entire chip sector has really just fallen over in the last few months. And Intel obviously has gotten no legs. Now, remember something. I mean, I think we need to make something very clear that Intel has come up with excellent quarterly numbers over the last several quarters. As a matter of fact, I don't think I recall a quarter that Intel's numbers weren't really decent. You know, when we saw margins in the 60 plus range, which is pretty significant, especially given the fact that some of the components that they use, or the input components, have gone up in price. But you see that they come out with good numbers. They say it's one of the best quarters they ever have. The question always remains, well, if this is the best quarter they're going to have, then that's it. Why should we continue staying in the stock? And I mean, everything was great. But the question is, you know, how much did the dollar, the weak dollar, help them, if it did? How much did emerging markets help them, if it did? And just like every other time, you saw a significant rise in Intel in the after hours. Markets were all happy, and then it kind of just slowly melted away throughout the day, and then just that was it.
Yeah, it goes back to where it was.
Right.
These old tech companies, Intel being one of them, that don't show a lot of volatility, are kind of dead money, which is kind of disappointing. I think they should just take up the – they should just take and start – they should raise their dividend. They should just start distributing their profits. I mean, they just have to keep some, obviously, for R&D and the rest. But I think they should just start distributing and give up on the idea of ever becoming a growth company again. The last time they were a growth company, it really had nothing to do with them. It was during the dot-com boom. The stock went to 80. And but then if you look at the tech stocks back in the 1999-2000 time frame, all the stocks were ridiculously overpriced. They shot way up, and they were all on. It was all on the coattails of the .com craziness. It had nothing to do with it.
But what's interesting is on the coattails of the cloud craziness, they've gotten no play.
Yeah, but the cloud craziness is not anything like the .com phenomenon, where you had all these IPOs and people were becoming billionaires overnight, and it was just it was hectic, because then I think Sarbanes-Oxley came in and killed all that, because now you can't do that anymore. And it's right. ruined it for everybody, and I think that's part of the problem. I think, you know, to be honest about it, I think if Sarbanes-Oxley was repealed and they were given an opportunity for people to, you know, publicly finance their companies a little bit more and kind of push the envelope rather than just come up with an idea and sell it to Google and let it, disappear in the dust, I think things would liven up. But that's not going to happen, apparently.
Apparently not. But I tell you something, they gave a real shot between Intel's numbers. IBM came out tonight, also big week for earnings. I mean, we saw Goldman Sachs today. We saw last week Bank of America after we talked. Last week was the beginning, kind of setting the stage. This week, there's a tremendous amount of earnings coming out, and then it kind of flows out and continues pretty strong for the next few weeks. But IBM came out with numbers, and they had great revenue. Oh, actually, they missed on revenue. Excuse me. They had good revenues, but missed on revenue. Beat the street EPS by a little bit. But one of the concerning factors was that their contract bookings, their bookings, were really shy. Mm-hmm. And if you remember this week, we also saw Infosys, which is an Indian IBM, right? At least in terms of service and support. I don't think they have clearly not the the hardware. So Infosys came out with numbers, and they just went down, I think, 8 or 10% right after the numbers came out, and it was a very big disappointment. And IBM comes out. It's up 2% immediately. It hits the 52-week high, and then it just hangs out there. It doesn't do anything. And all of a sudden, it starts to slowly but surely move lower. Now, the one thing about IBM that we know, they have a tremendous, enormous buyback program in place. Right. One of the things that IBM is doing is they are looking for a certain EPS per share in a certain year. And one of the ways they're going to get there, one of the ways they have gotten there, is to do share buybacks. And you and I have talked about this, right? What does a share buyback do? It shrinks the number of shares, compressing the amount of shares to the same earnings. Therefore, you get a higher earnings per share.
Exactly.
You don't really get a higher earnings per share. Let's, wink, wink. Right.
Yeah, you get the higher earnings per share out in the that's available in the market.
Right, and I've told you this before, and I'll say it again. I think there really should be an adjusted for buybacks earnings per share number that's out there. I've never seen it. Hmm. I'm sure we could probably.
It's calculable. Calculate
it. Yeah, it's calculable. Yeah, but it would be a much better way to look at things. But then again, you'll be out of sync with everybody else.
I'm surprised the shadow stats guys don't do something like that.
Yeah, maybe they do. Maybe they do. I mean, you could definitely do something like that. They look at, S&P with dividends, without dividends. You could probably look at the EPS with and without. But here's the rub. So revenues were short, and it started moving down. And they reported better than expected net income. And they also were saying that there's going to be an increase, and they expect to be, for the full year, a little bit higher than originally anticipated. The main issue, they said, was that the earnings were helped by a weak dollar and a strong performance in the U.S., but mostly in the emerging markets. So we have two now saying that the emerging markets have been a big play for them, Intel and IBM. Now, IBM turned around by about, 2.5%. They were about 2.5% lower after running up. So they really did about a 4% turnaround, whereas Intel was up about 5% after hours, 5 or 6.
Hmm.
But then again, there's a lot more short on Intel than IBM. So, there's a boatload of people short, so you're going to get a lot of short covering first. People running.
Yeah. Well, I don't know what to tell you. All I know is that I'm not a big fan of the IBM stock. I think it's I think it's problematic. In fact, I know guys that were pretty smart investors that were heavily short IBM stock in January 2009 at 80.
Mm-hmm.
And they were making – they started shorting it. I think it was – if you look in the chart, it was around 130, and they were shorting all the way down. And they maintained that position, I think, and then I guess it hasn't worked out for them since then.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't say it has. We actually started buying it about in the 120s, and I sold my last position I want to say the end of last week. We sold the last piece of IBM in the 60s, something like that.
Interesting.
It was a nice little move on that. But there was some other things. VMware came out and blew the top off of the numbers. Remember something? Those whole plays, the Citrix, the VMwares, the Salesforce, all those names, if you will, the cloud plays, have been getting just butchered lately. I mean, they're just, you know, one-way street down ever since some of the numbers came out with the complaints about China and Japan. So VMware comes out with a nice number and just skyrockets, you know, does very nicely. Yahoo comes out and beats and nobody has respect for it. It's just kind of up a little bit. Who else came out tonight that was pretty big? There's a couple other big ones.
Yahoo's, to me, another dead money company.
Well, that's been, yeah, it's been
that
forever.
It's been that way for a long time, but it's so obvious now. Again, there has to be some sort of excitement. I don't think the cloud thing was ever exciting enough to ignite the whole sector. That's the problem. I mean, cloud right. is, you know, it's a few companies benefit and nobody else cares. I don't know what can be done about this. I'm very disappointed.
Yeah, the technology space in general has been very weak for months now. Apple is rolling over. They have earnings tomorrow night. And we're going to see really where the rubber meets the road on that one. And you see that, you know, most of the technology, look at some of the chips companies, Cirrus, C-R-U-S, it dropped off a cliff last week. You know, it just went straight down after there was some concern about manufacturing and production. And there's been a kind of a tale of many, many sides. I mean, some of the companies have been doing, you know, pretty well and keeping up. And other companies just obliterated recently. And that includes Google. Do you see Google? Google dropped below its 200-day moving average. It was... I think it's 521 it closed at.
Yeah, 521. Today. Yeah, well, there's, I think a lot of it has to do there's a growing concern about Larry Page.
Yeah. He did not do himself justice on the conference call.
Yeah, he didn't take it seriously. He didn't actually care. Shows up, I guess.
I could see him kind of walking in jeans, if that, or maybe shorts, kind of a tank top, flip-flops, and on his way out with his sunglasses on his head.
Yeah, that's kind of the impression I think people got. I think that was the problem, and that was not a good thing. He should have not shown up at all. I would think.
Right. Exactly.
I mean, you don't show up and say, "Hey, I'm here, but I'm busy."
Right. I got other things to do.
I got other things to do. I mean, yeah, well, maybe you do, but what are they? I mean, can't you take a, you know, it was bad. Yeah.
Well,
listen to that conference call?
I listened to part of it. I read part of it. I read some of the commentary about it. Basically, the main issue that would hurt Google, I think, was, well, two things. I think their expulsion, essentially, from China has caught up to them a little bit. I think the second point is that when you look at the situation when it comes to employees, where they were adding a tremendous amount of body count, you know, head count, and now that hurt their overall net income. That was inevitable. I mean, when people start, this has been the huge issue in this whole entire recovery is that there's been low headcount, right? Right. And unemployment's high. So when they start hiring, I don't know what all these people are doing, but they're hiring at Google. And it really took a whack to their EPS. And there's a lot of concern that there is no direction, that Page didn't, I think he was on for less than 5 or 6 minutes and didn't explore and discuss any of the direction plan. Or you know, provide any detail of what the hiring is and how investors can be comfortable with this.
So it killed the stock.
Yeah, well, the stock is. I think it's there's a buying. It's presenting to me a buying opportunity at some point because I just don't see Page screwing up the company. I mean, he's with his pal. You know, Sergey's not going to let that happen, and. Schmidt's still on the board, and I mean, there's not, you know, I think this problem's being exaggerated. Page may just not think much of these conference calls or care much about what the price of the stock does, but if profits, you know, go back to their normal track, Google's still the company to beat.
Right. Well, then again, maybe this is all about Bing taking them out. What do you think?
Yeah, Bing. You know, one of the things that these companies don't do well is what Microsoft used to do well. They don't do it as well as they used to, which is to come out in these conference calls and go, oh, my God, this doesn't look good.
Yeah.
We have, I don't know what to tell you, but, you know, I think we're going to be up for a couple of stiff quarters. We're going to be lucky to be alive.
Right.
You know, the CEO's got food poisoning. We don't know what's going to happen to him. And so then they blow the door off the place when they come in with their earnings unexpectedly.
Right. Unexpectedly.
And the stock just rockets.
Yep. And I mean, Apple does that. Apple does that. They come out with, you know, hey, guidance is a little bit, we're going to keep it tight. You know, we're only going to do X, but they come out with X times 3.
Yeah.
But everybody see, every after a while, you kind of catch on to that.
I don't know that anyone's ever caught on to it. Microsoft used to pull that crap constantly.
Oh, but we look at the average surprise from estimates and from company guidance, and we could see what the average surprise has been and look at that and what the deviation has been from there and then make some judgments of where the you know where things are going to be really way out of whack.
Well, Google hasn't done that ever. So I think they could surprise people a few times.
Well, this time they surprised them to the downside, yes.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So you know, overall, I mean, when you started the conversation with, you know, the markets have been moving in a variety of ways. One of the big things that we saw this week was on Monday, a couple days ago, yesterday, where everything seemed all just rosy and fine, nothing exciting in either direction. The markets had been down for a couple of weeks, nothing really big. And I'm there in the office, and about 9 o'clock, I got, you know, all my screens, my currencies on there, and I'm watching. And all of a sudden, out of the corner of my eye, I see this something fall off my screen.
Well, let me guess. It was a Florida cockroach.
Oh, that no. They would cover my screen. They're very large. You actually put leashes on them down here, take them for walks. But no, the S&P futures dropped off, just off, straight down.
Yeah.
And the currencies went like berserk, like everything was starting to my screens were like smoking, you know what I mean? It was just like, whoa, what's going on? You got the dollar is starting to shoot down, the euro shooting up, you got the yen moving all of a sudden, then you got it turning around, and I'm like, what in the world? What happened was the S&P had the brass cojones to actually change the outlook on the USA's debt rating to negative. Kept the AAA rating.
Yeah, they kept the AAA, but they it was essentially a warning.
Oh, yeah, it was a big warning. And it was followed up with a warning on top of that, saying that if you don't get your act together by 2013, which obviously gives you a little bit of time to do something, we're going to snap off one of those A's, and you're going to lose your perfect AAA rating. I thought that was pretty pretty ballsy. I guess they're not going to get more contracts from the government, huh?
I don't know. This is probably a backstory here we don't know about.
Well, it is part of the backstory. It was a few days before that. There was that conversation that blamed Goldman and banks and the ratings agencies for the financial meltdown. Okay, so that came out. And then the discussion was that how dare the ratings agencies, you know, be beholden to anyone. They should do an independent rating and, you know, rate it as it is, so to speak, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, you need to do your job in advance. We don't need to know this stuff after the fact. So I guess S&P said, okay, you know, we all know what the real situation is, but nobody had the balls to do anything about it. So S&P cuts it. Things go bananas. And Moody's came out afterwards and didn't do anything. And then, of course, we get, you know, the White House, Obama saying, hey, just to let you know, Moody's didn't change anything. We don't really agree with that. And then we had Goolsbee come out today and say, you know, we believe that we are fine. And then, of course, Geithner comes on CNBC on Tuesday morning and says, everything is fine here. You know, we don't agree with the rating service. You got to love being a government. They can say whatever they want.
Yeah, we don't agree. Like
you know,
that.
We don't agree with that. Can you imagine one of the companies coming out and saying, you know what, we don't agree with Moody's. We're just not going to count them anymore. Investors would laugh at them.
Well, there you have it.
There you have it. So Geithner comes out. Japan says, hey, we still are very big supporters. No kidding. Hello. You know, they need us at this point of U.S. Currency, et cetera. Meanwhile, I sent you a chart of the U.S. dollar. Do you see that attached to the email I sent you?
Is it the first the one? It says Silver Weekly. DXY.
Yeah, take a look at that one there.
Dollar index spot.
Now, this is just from 2008, but there's two different occurrences here. You got a triple top there. Every time it gets towards about 88, this is the DXY composite, the dollar index, basket against many different currencies. Basically, it's at the low it's been since mid to end of 2008. It hit 75, 74 and change, maybe today turned up a little bit, but it's off by 15% since the beginning of 2010. That's extraordinary.
Yeah, for currency.
15.19%.
Yeah, yeah. Gold doesn't move that much.
Yeah, it's just unbelievable. So this continual blowing down of the dollar has helped everything, the commodity space, the stocks. And somebody made a really great comment today. They said, Bernanke got what he wanted. He bought himself an incredible rally. I think that kind of sums it up, don't you?
Where's the rally?
What do you mean, where's the rally? From 2009 till now?
Oh, yeah, no, that rally. But is there a new rally coming that he's bought himself?
There was one. If you look at this, this is pretty much, this chart is an inverse of the stock market.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, pretty much.
Yeah, so the dollar goes in the tank and the stocks go up, which is, of course, you know, well, it makes sense in some funny way because you have, like, real property versus something that changes in value, but it's fixed to the real property. So the real property goes up in value, but the underlying dollar amount is actually worth less internationally.
Right.
So in other words, nothing's really changed.
Right, nothing's really changed besides the fact that in Zimbabwe, where they have X 100% per day inflation, their stock market flies.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Well, who cares?
Yeah.
You know, so what's the difference? It's kind of crazy. So the that's kind of what happened on Monday, and the stocks were down like 2%. There was red everywhere, horrible red, just all over the place. And Tuesday we come back, and by the way, the VIX shot up. Tuesday we come back, it's like Monday never existed. It just didn't exist. It didn't. Nothing happened. Nothing a problem here. You know, everything's good. And the dollar continued on its merry way down again. So there you have what's going on. And then, you'll see a nice futures pop. Japan is up. Japan came out with a report tonight that their exports, the recent export report, came out that was a negative, I think, 2.2% compared to previous quarter. And analysts only expected a negative 1.1. And don't forget that Japan is a big exporting nation. That's where they get a lot of their profits from, right?
Right.
Stock market's up 1.6%. Because it has nothing to do with anything. Nothing has anything to, it has to do with the fact that if it's up and everybody's happy because Intel did well, it's good. Now, because Alcoa didn't do well and Goldman didn't do well and JP Morgan didn't do well and didn't do well, nobody cares. But because we got one stock out of the batch that we could all hang our hat that things are much better now. You know what I mean? Wow, that really solved all the problems. Look at that. We got a good earnings report out. Rally the markets up 2%.
It's kind of pathetic.
It's what it is. I mean, they just hang their hats on whatever it is. The shorts come in. They bust the shorts. They hold that 50-day average. If the S&P actually has been below its 50-day average now for the last 3 or 4 days. The small caps are right on their 50-day average. They got obliterated yesterday. And today they came back a small amount. But, this is what's going on. There's a lot of money in the system right now. And now they're talking about the next generation of quantitative easing. Just when you thought it was safe to figure that the government's meddling in the financial monetary system would kind of maybe slow down. Now already, because quantitative easing 2, QE2, is ending in June officially, they're talking about how now the money that they're getting from bond repayments will be reinvested into bonds again. No new money, but they're not going to pay off anything. They're just going to reinvest it.
Mm.
So that's like quantitative easing 2.2.
It's kicking the quantitative easing can down the road. They're always talking about kicking the can down the road. This sounds like a...
Yeah, exactly what it is. And that does not help out the situation when it comes to the credit rating. But I don't think they care.
Well, they might if the S&P guys actually follow through on their threat.
Yeah, but then what they'll do is they will revoke their license or something. Congress will vote them out. Don't you think? Seriously.
Well, something probably, yeah, maybe.
I mean, look what happened with the poker sites. You see what's going on with these poker sites? These
online
poker sites?
This is actually a story I've been kind of following, yeah. They decided shut them down and take the money.
They froze the money. I have friends that I know have money with them. They froze it all.
I always thought it was risky.
It's risky, but I mean, it was offshore, you know, as long as we agree to it and all that, you know, but listen, Harry Reid is floating a plan to have online legalized poker and gambling through domestic companies. And I think there's some kind of connection there to all of a sudden them busting poker stars and wherever else they are. And now Harry Reid floating. And by the way, you know, I don't know if you ever enjoy. I like to watch poker sometimes on TV, right?
I find it to be the dullest possible thing to watch. I mean, I would rather watch grass grow.
So you like golf better?
Golf is probably – I don't like golf either. But
yeah, how about women's baseball?
Or women's basketball. Actually, women's baseball at college level with that underhand pitching.
Fast-pitched. Yeah, that's cool.
That underhand pitching with the softball. That's kind of fun to watch for a few innings. But, you know, tend to be some woman that can really pitch, and she just strikes everybody out, so it's, you know, not right. that interesting. Right. No, the women's basketball, I don't think – no. I mean, I have sat down and watched a couple of hands, but it's like I don't care. I don't know these people. I don't care whether they win or lose. It seems to be a lot of it just a luck.
Well, then I have good news for you. Disney shut them all down on the ESPN network.
Good.
Because now that it's illegal and they're all advertising the poker stars and the whatever it is.
Oh, they can't get any advertisers. That's right, why they shut it down. It wasn't because of any higher, you know.
So you're saying that Disney did it only for the money aspect, not because of the moral aspect?
Exactly.
Ah, I see. I see. So anyway, this whole thing is I don't know. I people are not allowed to do it. It's you know, you're allowed to do certain things if you're standing in Nevada. But if you're in Utah, you can't do it.
Well, yeah.
Ridiculous. Reminds me of those. You ever been to a dry city, a dry town?
Yeah.
Dry county?
They're all over the place in Texas.
Right, but right on the other side is a package store.
Exactly.
There's always one right on the line.
Yeah.
You go in there, you buy whatever you want, and then take it in and drink it. That's fine. Oh, well. Anyway, so Twitter. There's some rumor that TweetDeck is in talks, and this I found astonishing, that Twitter may pay $50 million to buy TweetDeck. $50 million to buy TweetDeck. This is a program that basically links into the API of Twitter so that you could do Twittering from your desktop, and they're going to spend $50 million on this. Am I missing something?
The stupidity?
We should do this. How hard is that?
I know. We blew it.
Oh, my gosh. How hard is this? I don't understand. And why would they buy them?
I mean, it seems like a make-buy decision that would lean toward make.
You know what? I have an announcement. I want to make this clear. If anybody that has any influence at Twitter, John doesn't know I'm going to say this, but if anyone has any influence at Twitter, John and I are willing to create an unbelievable desktop Twittering application, $10 million. Are you with me?
Well, I was thinking 15, but yeah, I'll 15. Go with 10.
15. We'll put some extra color and we'll put some more interaction there, as well as maybe some site counter and social networking interaction. And we'll say something about Facebook on it and it'll really be good. So ridiculous. I mean, that's there's so many of those little applications. Why would they do that? Next, they're going to buy Twitter later for $10 million.
I have no idea.
It's nuts.
It's baffling.
Yeah. Well, you know, you start seeing these kind of headlines when you start getting worried.
No, I agree 100%. This is the kind of nuttiness that you saw before the 99-2000 crash from the, you know, the dot-com collapse. There was just stuff coming out, and people were kind of oblivious to it. That was just like, this doesn't really make any sense to me. You know, oh, you don't get it. You don't get it. It's always right. What they tell you. You don't get it.
The numbers are much more absurd now, aren't they?
I don't think they're – no, I don't think so. I think it was just as absurd, some of the stuff. I mean, I think less the numbers than some of these ideas. I mean, like the pet food by, you know, Federal Express, Pets.com, and Webvan. I mean, delivering.
Webvan was cool. Come on.
I've actually ordered from him a couple of times, but it was just an idea whose time had come and gone and passed in the 50s. I mean, that was the milk truck was the
– and the dairy barn.
The dairy, you know, would go driving around. They'd drop off some milk and some butter, and you'd leave the little bottles out, and the whole thing. It was a very elaborate system, but it at some point it just was not competitive.
Yeah.
And to think that it was going to be competitive again out of the blue – that something changed in the society when nothing had changed. They, in fact, most of the business that they were doing was with other dot-com companies, and the only reason they were doing any of this is because these guys were working their tails off at the office, and they needed to get food in there somehow, and these guys are mostly a delivery service.
Yeah. Well, so we have that going on. Facebook, of course, is gaining millions of dollars by the minute in valuation. I mean, I think the latest was about $65 billion for the valuation of Facebook, which is amazing.
Well, there's another craziness thing that's going to come to an end.
Yeah, and the two twins, Van Muttemeyers or whatever those guys are, that were suing because they had the idea and that whole Facebook thing.
Yeah.
The deal was thrown out. They can't come back anymore for any of this. And there's still that one guy lagging, by the way.
Yeah, the one guy.
He's got over 50% of the company.
Yeah, supposedly.
Or maybe it's eight, something like that.
And he can prove it. It's half and half, and he's got all the documentation to prove it.
Yeah, but he won't show anybody because until they pay him.
Or something. It's typical.
So there's a new shareholder suit against Warren Buffett and Berkshire Hathaway. And
you knew this was going to happen when that one guy came out with his insider trading deal.
Yep, and they're saying that the Sokol Lubrizol deal damaged the integrity of Berkshire and potentially is going to cause a downgrade of their debt, thereby more problems, et cetera, et cetera. So there's some kind of a lawsuit directly against Berkshire and Buffett himself. So that's good. And the funny thing about this is I find this really interesting. This is a guy that comes out and usually talks about all sorts of crapola, right? I mean, he's just, he's on CNBC every 3 minutes when there's something going on. They follow him with the whole entire caravan to China, to India. But somehow they can't get a camera in there and a reporter to ask him a couple of questions about this.
Yeah, interesting.
I mean, not a word. I haven't seen anything. Have you?
No.
Not a word. So I don't know what that means, but I just thought it was kind of suspicious.
Yeah, I would say.
Yeah. Well, let's see. Goldman. You want to talk about your Goldman? The one the one that is hopefully going to go a year to a year on the DH Unplugged stock list.
I'm still hanging in there.
You're hanging in there by a thread at this point.
Yeah.
Not that what happened is Goldman came out. Again, everybody was really excited about the numbers until the market opened. And their income, first quarter income, fell about 72%. But that's supposedly they paid about $1.6 billion back in dividends to Berkshire Hathaway. And its revenue overall fell 7%. And they said the main issue was the weakness in some of its core business, including stock and bond trading and advising clients. And this has been, in general, the big banks have been having this problem that the bad loans and the write-downs and the benefits they got from all the cockamamie accounting is starting to come home to roost a little bit.
Anyway, so everyone's talking about trying to put one of these guys in jail and with some targets. And, it'd be funny, but I don't think it's going to happen.
How ridiculous is it that if you want to play poker online, okay, you get a account, you do your thing, and then somewhere along the line, this is a willing enterprise, and one day they're shut down, the owners and developers of this system are sent to jail, but the guys who built all sorts of $1 billion out of the economy and the government and stayed in their jobs and caused all sorts of harm to the employment situation, all that, are still hanging in there.
Hanging in there. They got huge bonuses on top of all that.
It just seems something is out of sync with all that, isn't there?
Well, it sounds like corruption.
Yeah, I find it reprehensible that, I mean, again, this is the difference is that you knowingly go to gamble, you knowingly go to do this and all that, and they shut it down, take your money, or at least freeze your money. The whole thing is one giant mess. It's a mess.
Yeah.
Oh, well. So, listen, Apple is coming out tomorrow night. We talked about that. We talked about the Fed easing. Okay. There is...
By the way, I want to apologize for about that. You're coming in very poorly this whole show.
Why?
I don't know. I mean, but the trouble is you're not coming in so poorly that I have to reconnect. So but it's annoying.
Oh, I hope it's not like that. Well, I apologize. Apple earnings we mentioned. Okay, so... The debt ceiling that we have in the United States is going to be lifted shortly. You know, we're at, what, $14.5 trillion now or something like that?
Yeah, I guess.
And they said that, don't worry, it's going to be lifted. Now, according to the plan, either by the Obama administration or by the Republicans that put forth the recent budget deal and money cutting and cut trillions of dollars out of the budget and all this stuff, that the expectation is by the next 5 years we'll have to raise it to $20
trillion.
Seriously, how about that for cuts?
Yeah.
That's pretty good. $20 trillion. I mean, what's $1 trillion anyway? I mean, what is that?
It's $1,000 billion.
It's unbelievable. A billion's too much.
Yeah, a billion's $1,000 million.
Do you know how many tweet decks you can make with that?
Apparently,
a lot.
Quite a few.
Yeah. So anyway, so Goldman came down, and the financial sector is looking pretty poor again, and there's been lots of downgrades on the whole sector. Gold, meanwhile, the shiny, lovely metal that it is, hit 1,500 today.
Yeah.
Wow.
Just keeps marching forward.
Keeps marching forward. Again, that's the inverse of the dollar. Dropped a little bit the other day, then it came back. But same thing with silver. Silver's been moving even in a percentage move, almost like a percent a day or so.
Yeah, or silver's more. On a roll. It looks like somebody's trying to corner the market or something. I don't believe these metals are going to continue on this pace, but you know, this could go on for another 5 years.
I don't. You know, it's possible. It's very possible. But again, it's all tied to the dollar. There's only so much the dollar could go down before things really get out of whack. You know, before inflation becomes ridiculous.
That and the fact that the other countries. I mean, Japan is eating it because of our dollar. I mean, right. The Lexus is overpriced now. It used to be like a bargain luxury car.
Right. What happened to the Hyundai that used to be like $3,000? They're like $35,000 and $40,000 now.
Well, Hyundai decided to go high end with their. They're trying to make a luxury car that compete with Mercedes and. So
is the Hyundai $30,000 car? If the low end car was really cheap for a while, right?
Yeah.
Is their high end car the $30,000 or so, the equivalent of like $120,000 Mercedes?
You know, I'm going to drive one. They have a new one that's a V8. I mean, I see them on the road a lot around here because
they're pretty.
They're very pretty, and a lot, yeah. And they actually look like a Mercedes. And I've seen every once in a while, I see one. I say, you know, that's a pretty good looking car. And I'm tempted to go into a showroom and drive one around and at least see what you know how it compares, because I know they like to compete with the Japanese. It would be probably competitive with the high end Toyotas or low end Lexus. I don't know. I'm not sure.
Right.
But they.
Right.
But the V8 is the key, and they have one that's got a V8 in it. And,
right. How's it on gas?
That's, you know, it's the same as all the rest of them. They're, you know, reasonably good gas mods, around 30, I suppose. Generally speaking, they don't have a lot of power, and so they get pretty good gas mileage. But that's doesn't seem, you know, I think they're missing the point. If you're going to do a luxury car, you have to assume that the person's not going to be a penny pincher about gasoline, and he wants some pep.
Yeah, but penny pinching was one thing. Dollar pinching is another.
Still.
Yeah, I hear you. You know,
if you have some gutless wonder that's really good looking, I mean, you know, the thing you push right. And the guys, it's not good. I mean, they have these new Mustangs just a Mustang GT with 420 horsepower.
Right.
You know,
it's kind of like if you have to pay $100,000 in taxes, don't complain about it.
Yeah, kind. That's true. Yeah, exactly.
Right. So with all this talk about the debt ceiling, with the incompetence of the spending in the government, and the banking issues, all the problems with the dollar, I put another chart on here of silver. I want you to take a look at something interesting. Now, I bring this to you because over this weekend, I happened to bump into somebody, and the conversation turned to silver.
This is the silver weekly chart?
This is a weekly silver chart back to the 70s.
Yeah. And that 70 bump was from the Bunker
Inflation.
Hunt. No, that wasn't that from the attempt to corner the market by Bunker Hunt.
But was that in the 70s? Was that the 70s? Or was
it
before that?
Right there. I think that's it.
But it was also the inflationary times that they were. It's the same concept. I mean, I think isn't it J.P. Morgan that owns? Oh no, they own copper. They own copper. It's still a very similar situation where you had this massive inflation move. That's exactly what it was. The late 70s into the early 80s,
yeah,
right?
But then why didn't it maintain? It went up to 40. It should have stayed there. Why did it drop like a rock?
Well, our inflation because the dollar went up, and because they put these major constraints on the Fed funds rate and the interest rate and discount rate went flying up to control inflation. Remember, that was Volcker's day.
Yeah.
And they smacked it down, and all these things came down very hard. And if you look at this, though, I mean, the parabolic move we're talking about between 79 and, what, 80 is almost identical to what you see now. The difference is it hit about 50 back then, Then it came down to about $4, and it was $10 in 2009. So it's up 400% since the end of 2009. It's up 250% since 2010. And we don't have that kind of inflation, by the way.
Yeah, well, I'm looking this up, by the way. Let me just tell you this, because I think this is the real story here, and I think it's maybe happening again. It was in 73 they started accumulating silver, the Hunt boys, Nelson mm-hmm. and William, and I guess it was, well, anyway. It was in 79 they put a big pool together, and they amassed 200 million ounces, and 79 is when the thing skyrocketed.
Yep.
And in late 79, early 80, the price was 50, peaking at 54. And then once it was cornered, the outsiders joined the chase, but a combination of changing trading rules.
Right. That's the situation that they have now that goes on, where they change the margin requirements. Because this is a commodity, and the commodity, when you buy these things, they can be leveraged up dramatically. I mean, dramatically. So, you know, the buying begets more buying, and it keeps on rolling. And I think there's a bit of a this parabolic move that we're seeing right now is a bit of a I don't want to say bubble, but it's this, you know, people are looking at this as a much cheaper alternative to gold, and they're seeing the move as it does. And everybody is starting to believe the Peter Schiff's of the world that say that the dollar is going to be obliterated. Just gone.
Yeah. Good luck.
If the dollar's gone, I don't want to own anything. We need to be somewhere else. You know, because none of these assets are going to be good for anything. And the last thing I want to do is start scraping a piece of silver to get a sandwich. You know what I'm saying?
Have a bar on you. How much do you use? You have a potato peeler, and you just kind of skim off some of this guy.
We should. Now there's a business. We can come up with some kind of way to not only slice off slivers of silver, but weigh it for the value of it.
You have a small scale. They have scales that are that sensitive, no problem,
right.
All digital. And yeah, you'd shave off the piece of silver from your stick that you carry with you, because, you know, all these crazy people have decided the dollars are useless. Mm-hmm. You shave off the thing, and it lands on this little scale, and it just keeps going up, and then you get a green light when it pays for what you're doing. And you take a little chunk back or whatever, and then that's how you do business.
Or maybe we can come up with like a do-it-yourself at-home smelter, you know, where you can melt it and you can weigh out a tenth of an ounce at a time to carry around with you. Now, the problem will be when you pay getting change, obviously. There's a whole different system we'd have to create.
There'd probably have to be multiple metals involved.
And then Visa's going to get involved, and they're going to give you silver credits. Nobody's going to use silver anymore. They're going to use the credit card. I can see it all already. Maybe that's why they have the gold card already. They're trying to – and the platinum card for that matter.
Yeah, they're getting used to
it. Getting ready.
Yeah. It's, who thought of it?
Right?
Yeah, it's possible.
But seriously, I think that the silver situation, while it probably has some rotten, room to go, only because there is nothing overhead at this point. And because you talk about the Hunt brothers, how they created a pool and probably brought a lot of outside people to invest in it, right?
Yeah.
Well, it's the same thing, I think, as maybe these commodity ETFs and the SLV ETF, where, you know, the average guy and gal out there can put in $50, $100, $200.
So that's interesting. You're absolutely correct. That would be the same thing in a virtual sense.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the big problems with the markets and the commodities in general, where you could just easily go out and purchase – a metal or commodity through that. And commodities, by the way, folks, my thinking, the word commodity, it was a general use item, and it was priced for, let's say, consumption and things like that. But the way that's being used right now is more as a financial asset, not only silver, but look at corn. You know, it's used by the speculators. Even Obama came out today and said that oil price is so high because of the speculators.
Yeah,
he said
we're
starting that again. We're starting this whole thing again.
Right.
And you know, but a lot of that is because of the instruments that are available for them to do so, the ease of access. So I think silver could be one of those things that may have some legs, and maybe it has another 10% or so. But we'll talk about that when we get to our stock picks. I have an idea.
All right. Well, let's take I think we've gone through the main things. Let's take a look at the stocks.
Let me get there here. By the way, while you're looking at that, AT&T announced today that it will not let Research in Motion's BlackBerry owners tether their phones to the playbook. Now, that's a real bummer.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, that was the whole point. It just gets worse and worse for that company.
No, AT&T is a miserable operation. They should be shut down.
Yeah. So your Goldman is – I got to look at what the high price of Goldman was over this time period and see if you actually got – you may have been close to being stopped out here.
Stopped out at a profit?
Oh, yeah, of course.
Yeah.
You know, but somewhere around – it'd probably be 8, 9% or something like that if you were stopped. I got to look at the high price over this time period.
Yeah.
I know you didn't get stopped out a while ago. It would have to be in the last few weeks to now.
Yeah, take a look at it.
Yeah. You were stopped out on your Widepoint Corporation, and the rest of the stuff is just kind of hanging in there. Albemarle came out tonight with earnings, and they were 6% up after hours, again, the chemical company. Lexian just rolling along, Metro PCS, pretty much everything's the same. Nothing really changed too much from week to week, even with that gigantic drop down recently. We're still seeing kind of the same numbers. The only big, unbelievable, holy smokes at this point is Sina. It doesn't want to go down. It won't stay. I don't know what happened after it went over 100, and then it kind of pulled back and went back and back. And then all of a sudden it got this ignition. Not only that one, the Dang, Sina, Sohu, NetEase.
No, Sina's unbelievable. I think that's that beat my Tokyo. I mean, my Tokyo Electric was a nice quickie, but Sina is just killing it. And I'm on the short side, so I can't, you can do 300-400%. I can't possibly do that in a million years, and I'm shorted. I'm stopped that anyway. But
a lot of this has to do with the, I think, because I don't know what's going on with the Chinese internet plays right now, but really they're ridiculous. And I don't know if it's because of maybe the Google earnings in a way that kind of there's some more play over there in China. They realize that their own companies are getting a better deal, or maybe it's because of this murmuring about Facebook teaming up with some of these companies over there. But I mean, this is just. I mean, you're talking about 5% today, 7% yesterday. It's just nonstop. And it was up 7%, I think, on the down day yesterday. Hmm. Now, I would like to say your Camac Energy. It's hanging in there. It's only down 17%, which is good. A lot better than I would have anticipated. And this is all you have to do is wait. We got a wide stop on this, which is pretty much we'll let this go down to 50 cents. Okay, if it goes down. But if they get some good press release and maybe there's some more of those emails that go out about the hello,
the
I am the prince.
We need more emails.
Right, we need emails to go out and saying, hello, I have a special deal and I'm only sending this to you. We need $50 million. All you have to do is pay $25 for it and we'll send you a check tomorrow. This Nigerian, crazy Nigerian play.
That would be useful.
We'll see some good move, I think, about from OpenText tomorrow, and Acme will be up nicely, assuming, and even Qualcomm will do pretty nicely tomorrow, I bet, on the Intel numbers and on the numbers from some of the VMware, Riverbed. We'll see some nice play here. Riverbed reaffirmed their recent numbers. So, you'll see some of the technology do pretty well unless something bizarro happens. But I'll tell you what's happening in the market, though. What we've clearly seen is every move up has been a profit taking. Doesn't mean it has to move the stocks down, but there's clearly been profit taking and selling into the strength lately. Now, I don't know if that's going to stop. If we see decent earnings rolling out and if there's a lot less anxiety about things, but so far in the last, let's call it month and a half, each move has been met with some profit taking to hold the top level of the overall market and of stocks. There are individual stocks that are breaking out. I can tell you, I mean, today there was a number that just was up 5-6%. They were just moving like crazy. What we do is we for our portfolios, we plan on, okay, we're going to move into this stock, stock ABC, if it hits this price on reasonable volume. If it hits that price, we're going to enter into the stock, and if it moves up to this price, and it may be only 50 cents higher, let's say, to clear a point, we're going to enter in another 30% or 40%. Then we're going to enter in a full position if it goes above this point. And you have to be darn quick these days because the stocks, when they start moving, I mean, they move. We had a stock today, RES, RPC. It's like a Halliburton. They do a lot of oil and oil machinery and drilling maintenance, et cetera. It hit our number, and as soon as it hit our number, we hit it, but it just kept going. I mean, it just kept going. It was up, I think, 8% today. Mm. And you don't want to get in late because then you could lose 5% of the base there. you know, if you're not on it. So right now, stocks are moving very, very quickly, and you have to be careful to pin your price and to make sure you get in at that price that you want to get in, you know, assuming all other things are met. But so I'm going to go short silver this week. I'd probably want to wait a little bit, but I think that, you know, we could short silver.
On the spreadsheet, you have three positions.
Well, we only have one. I'm going to fill those in if you have anything, or if we.
Yeah, I got one.
Okay, let me.
Think it's somewhat conservative. I could be wrong. But I just like the chart. I like the way this thing that's bouncing off the upper and lower limits, which is NVO, Danish drug company.
Let's see here. Putting that in. You're going long.
Yeah.
NVO. This is, Novo Nordisk. Yeah, good company. Very good company, actually. A lot of the nice thing about this genre is that, well, first of all, in favor in the last 12 weeks, the rotation into healthcare has been enormous. And some of the numbers that have come out lately from some of the companies, Abbott reporting tomorrow morning, for example, and Bristol did recently, I mean, they've been pretty good numbers. You know, with an aging population and with the distribution in a lot of countries, it's quite
Yeah, the aging population, distribution, and price gouging. You have to make sure to mention that.
Oh yeah, sorry, I didn't mention that. Yeah, the price gouging, the legal price gouging, because we could see how the Health Care Act has really slowed down the advance of premiums on insurance, costs for pharmaceuticals. And it really held back the share prices of most of the HMOs, right?
Yeah, they're dead in the water.
Suffering.
Watched some of these. I've seen. I get some. I take certain medicines, and over time, and the I look at the prices that I pay. You pay the copay $10 or whatever, but the base price that is charged is on the receipt. It says, you know, it's kind of like they're short of saying you've saved, you know, this much money. They don't do that, but they have a price on there. I have run into drugs that are just kind of standard old everyday things that used to be $25, let's say, and you pay like 10 or whatever for the copay. That same exact drug, since the whole Obamacare thing started cranking up, has gone from $25 to $75. You still pay the same $10, so you don't care, right?
Right.
But the fact of the matter is, somebody's getting the $75 now. The drug company gets more. I mean, they just say, well, let's just run whatever we can. Let's just crank the price up to the max. Make it $1,000. Who cares? The guy's paying his $10, and then the bill goes out, and the government, somebody, you know, the insurance company, somebody has to pay this money. It's just it's an obvious, ridiculous scam that is just worsening by the day. I mean, I don't see any end to it. So if you don't have insurance, you're totally screwed.
Yeah, I agree. Anything else?
That's why Novartis goes on and says, well, you know, if you can't afford the drugs, let us know. We'll make a deal.
Right. Exactly. And it's a big hoopla. Any other stocks? I mean, we got a lot of Chipotle is coming out with earnings tomorrow night. We hold a position there, by the way. There's also there were some great numbers out of Wynn tonight. Las Vegas Sands could be another interesting play. Just kind of throwing out some names to hear. Some of the high flying chip companies that got crushed recently could be an interesting way to go as well. I'm trying to see what else is there.
Dead money. The company I was looking at that I think is kind of interesting, and I've always wondered. I think we should put one of these on the list at least, and just see what happens. Which is ICO.
ICO. Do I know what that company is?
ICO. International Coal Group.
Oh boy. Somebody just actually, let's see, International Coal. I'm going to say it's the same as Patriot and Alpha. We actually own well, I wouldn't say it's coal. Like, it's not really a coal company. It's because they move around so crazy. But, you know, but we own Cleveland Cliffs, which is more of an iron pellet play, I guess, energy. But no, but these things have been, you know, the coal companies have been amazing. I mean, you know, this thing's you like the ones with the smaller price there, but you know, year to date is up 35%. And we can put ICO. I mean, the coals are amazing. I don't know when their earnings are coming out. International Coal releases first quarter earnings. That was I don't see where that is. International Coal announces first quarter earnings release and company guidance April 11th. That was on the 11th they released it. So That stock popped a little bit. I mean, you know, if you want to institutional ownership is 90%, 4 million shares, that's big. I mean, you know, yeah.
That's well, that means there's not a lot of it floating around, so it could run up.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know what the anyone. I'll put that on the list.
Yeah,
I'll come up with something good next week. I mean, I got a couple of things that are I think could really move. But let me put ICO on here. Give you one more here. ICO.
I have to do something to make up for that Nigerian turkey.
I don't think many people are going to play that. I just ICO. Okay, that's in there. The other thing I want to mention is that a news item just came up across as we were speaking. A news item came out because we've been always talking about nobody's going to jail, right? And there was recently, I guess just tonight, the former head of company that was once the largest U.S. mortgage lenders has been convicted of fraud. Lee Farkas, the ex-chairman of Taylor Bean and Whitaker, was found guilty on all 14 counts he faced. Hmm. So there you go.
That's the guy.
Yeah, he's the one that's he's the fall guy. He's the lamb.
Yeah.
He's the one that's going down for whatever it is.
For everything.
For everything. He is the cause of everything. Most people probably never heard of Taylor Bean and Whitaker.
I never did until you just mentioned it.
they were a name that was out there for a while, but it's just nutty. Just absolutely nutty. All right, so that's the story. I'm sticking with it. And what else? That's about it.
Yeah, that's about it. We'll be back again next week, hopefully with a better connection from your end.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Well, that's not your fault. You should blame your cable provider, whoever you do business with. Mm. And and we'll see what happens. Yeah, I think the market is probably going to show the same pattern. This kind of interesting little March 4th. I don't know how to describe it.
Right.
It just uncomfortable to me. Anyway.
I hear you.
Okay.
All right, we'll talk soon. Be well.
Bye.
You've been listening in on a conversation with John C. Dvorak and Andrew Horowitz. Hope to be with you again soon. Bye-bye.
Now, I'm not broke, but badly bent. I'm not down to my last cent, because I got a dollar, but it's my last dollar bill. Yes, sir. In my pocket, there's a dent. All my dough is nearly spent, but I got a dollar, and it's my last dollar bill. Oh, I'd love just one more buck fortune left me by chance. Now, here's a hint, I feel like a mint. You can hardly tell by a glance. I don't care, no millionaire can give me the icy stare, cause I got a dollar, my last dollar bill.